All right, good afternoon. My name is Wade Wegner, and today we're going to talk about building applications, mobile applications using Windows Azure. And it's a talk that I've given for quite a while. Actually, I've given a form of this talk for almost 2 years. Certainly, it's evolved over the years. And one thing that's pretty exciting is, given some of the more recent updates to the Windows Azure platform recently, there's some really cool ways that we can show and showcase services running up in Windows Azure for mobile applications to consume. So hopefully you guys will enjoy the session. And in the off chance that you've seen me give this presentation in the past, there should be plenty of new material, so hopefully it'll be worthwhile. Again, my name is Wade Wegner. I work for Aditi Technologies, joined Aditi about 3 to 4 months ago. Prior to that, I was a technical evangelist for Windows Azure. So I worked for Microsoft and have been focused on Windows Azure since about 2008. And I started looking at mobile and cloud scenarios back in about late 2009, 2010. Everything from iOS devices to Android devices and then Windows Phone when Windows Phone 7 came out. So we're going to be talking about a lot of different patterns and different ways that you can use Windows Azure and the cloud along with these mobile applications today. And of course, if you ever want to reach or to connect with me, you can find me on Twitter at Wade Wegner, and I'd be more than happy to follow up with you or just connect. So today, again, we're going to talk about building device applications using Windows Azure, and we're going to go through a set of patterns and some best practices, specifically covering storage, identity, communications, and then we're going to take a look at some different platform services that come with Windows Azure and ways in which you can tap into them as a developer to get some additional capabilities for your mobile applications. And then throughout the talk, I'm going to be giving a lot of demos. In fact, I gave this talk at North America 2 weeks ago and almost ran out of time. So hopefully it's a little more concise and I won't run out of time and we'll get through everything today. North America was really just practice for Tech Ed Europe, I think. So we're going to talk about storage and some best practices using storage from the device, identity, how you keep track of users, how you can authenticate them to your services, different types of communication patterns, both pushing to devices as well as devices consuming services running up in Windows Azure and then the platform services. I'm going to make the assumption that you're here because you think there's something compelling about cloud and mobile applications, so I'm not going to try to spend a lot of time convincing you. I think these are some valid reasons, but I want to make sure that there's plenty of time to cover the material in the talk. And I also am going to make the assumption that you've at least attended one or two Windows Azure sessions. So I don't want to give you the whole platform as a service pitch again. I'd rather get a little bit more specific. This is a 300 level talk, so we're going to talk specifically about Windows Azure and device applications. But definitely there are a lot of very good compelling reasons to use Windows Azure when building mobile applications. So let's talk about storage. Now, within Windows Azure, there's a number of different storage constructs, different things that you can use for storing your data. You have the Windows Azure Storage Services. This is a highly scalable storage service running up in Windows Azure. And in it, you will have tables, which are really non-relational structured data, places where you can put, you know, information about users, some metadata. You can put lists of objects, things like that. So a great place for massive amounts of data that you need to scale out quite a bit. There's also Windows Azure Blobs, which is a place where you can put binary data. So if you think about the phone, this is a great place for putting images and pictures that you take or videos that you record. And one of the nice things about Windows Azure Blob storage is that you can attach it to the content delivery network, so you can serve this stuff up to your users closer to them. So it's a great service that we'll be talking about, and I'll be showing you some demos as well. There's also Windows Azure Queues, and queues are a place where you can put a work item so that you can decouple some of the assets of your application. So you can have like one tier of your application write to a queue, and then another tier, maybe it's some back-end worker roles or some processes, dequeue the message and actually run the work. So that's the Windows Azure Storage Service. There's also a relational database service, and this is SQL Azure SQL Database, a Windows Azure SQL Database, and it's a relational database service that's managed for you that you can put your SQL objects into. And so this is a great place if you need to do aggregations on your data, if you need to be able to join your data together, any kind of relational need that you might be used to with SQL Server, SQL Azure, and SQL Database are the right place for you. Now, with all of these different storage constructs, there's a question that you need to to be asking yourself and something you need to be cognizant of, and that's that in order to access these storage systems, you need to have some sort of secret. Now, with SQL Azure and SQL Database, I think that's pretty apparent as to what this secret is. It's your connection string. And in that connection string, you'll have a user, a SQL login name, as well as a password. And you want to make sure that that connection string stays secure. Additionally, with Windows Azure Storage, you have this concept of a primary access key. And a primary access key is a key that you'll use to sign a request that you make to the Windows Azure Storage service. And so that's so that the storage service can authenticate you. Now, the question becomes, where do you put these keys? Do you embed them in your application on the, that you deploy to a phone device, or do you put them someplace else? Because I guarantee once you take these keys and put them in your phone device, they're not going to stay secret. Someone's going to find a way to sideload your application or decompile your Zap or do whatever and try to extract the key. So you don't want to put the keys in the app. So you have to look at some other way to go about securely authenticating to these services. And that's what we're going to talk about. And again, the whole idea is you don't want to put these keys on the device and on the in the application because someone can get to them. And so there's a number of different patterns that we can use. And the first and most the most common is proxying these requests. So anytime, let's say I want to talk to SQL Azure or I want to talk to Windows Azure Storage Services, rather than talking directly to the services themselves, I can have my own service running up in Windows Azure and I'll proxy the request to that service. So the pattern looks something like this. The device, instead of going to the service itself, will go to my proxy service running up in a web role and send the request. Now, the keys are actually running in the service. So it's running up in a server deployed up in Windows Azure, and my users have no access to it. So these secrets can remain secret. They're not deployed along with the application. So now the service can make the request over to Windows Azure Tables. It could be Windows Azure Blobs. It could be SQL Azure. It could be wherever. But the whole idea is having a simple proxy in between the device and storage. So this works great. Now, there are times where we may not want to proxy requests. Think about a case where I take a picture on a device or I capture some video. If I proxy this through my service running in some other place like Windows Azure, you're introducing a whole other step when it comes to the upload process. So imagine I record this video and I want to upload it and get it into Windows Azure Storage. I don't want to have to first send it to my service and then the service then sends it to the storage service because that's an extra step. It'd be more efficient to be able to securely hand it directly off to the storage service. And so there's a way we can do this without having the key on the device, and it's using something called a shared access signature. And what a shared access signature is it's a URL that has been encoded in such a way that when you make a request to the storage service using this URL, you basically the storage service will be able to decode and validate that you have access to the resource, to the storage system. So it's a way of using being able to send directly from your device to the storage service without having to have the key on the device. So the pattern looks a little bit different. So instead of going directly to storage, what's going to happen is the device is going to call to your service and say, can I have a shared access signature? Your service will have the access key and can generate the shared access signature and send it back to the device. And again, this is just a URI that it's sending back to the device. Now that I have the shared access signature on the device, I can use this to address the storage service and send that shared access signature up to the storage service so that the storage service can authenticate and validate that I have access to the resource, and then will let me read whatever it might be. And I can send a message up or I can pull a message down. Again, the value of this is the key is still not stored on the device. The key is still securely in the service, but I have a way now to address the storage service directly so that I can reduce latency when I want to, upload something very large or pull down something that might be very large. So it's a very common pattern to see. And then lastly, I just wanted to emphasize that with SQL Azure, since most mobile devices can't talk TDS or can't talk directly to SQL Azure itself, it's very standard to have a proxy or a service standing in front of SQL Azure. And again, it would be a pattern where your device actually sends a request to your service and the service proxies it back to SQL Azure. And of course, you can have the response come back down to the device. So those are some patterns. Again, the trickiness here is making sure that we don't put things like keys and passwords and so forth on the device, but we still have access to the resources. Oh, of course. Queues. One other thing to think about it as well is that since a device has constrained processing power, oftentimes it's nice to be able to just offload a message into a queue and then have the worker role being responsible for dequeuing that message and then doing some offline processing. So here's just another pattern to think of. So with that, what I want to do is switch over and actually show some of this stuff in action and how we can actually use it. So what I'm going to do is create a brand new project, and the purpose of the app that I'm going to build is I want to be able to take a picture with my device and upload it into Windows Azure Blob Storage so that I have it available. I can view it online. I have it up in Windows Azure Storage. And I also then want to write a record to a Windows Azure table so that I can query it and get access to everything that I've uploaded along with the URI for where it's stored in Blob Storage as well. So I'm going to go ahead and create a Windows Phone application. And the first thing I'm going to do is take advantage of some resources that Microsoft creates. And specifically, there's a set of NuGet packages that provide you with a managed API for interacting with Windows Azure Storage from the Windows Phone device. And there's a managed API not only for Windows Phone, but for iOS and Android as well. So even though the syntax and the development experience is a little bit different, you have the ability to use these APIs, these managed APIs, on all these stacks, not just .NET. I'm going to show you the .NET one today. So to get that those resources, I'm going to use NuGet. And NuGet is Microsoft's packaging utility. So it gives you a way of taking someone else's code or code provided by Microsoft and so forth and deploying it directly into your application. So I'm going to install package, and this package is phone.storage. And phone.storage, like I said, is going to give me a bunch of resources that give me an API in the device that I can use to address Windows Azure Storage Service. All right, so now let's go ahead and update the main page, and we're going to throw some controls in here to use. I have to apologize. This machine is a little bit slower. My machine was not working this week, so I had a friend graciously lend me his machine. So it's a little bit slower. Hopefully, it doesn't affect the demos too much. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab a text block or a text box, a button, and a hyperlink. I'll put these in a stack panel. And go ahead and let's reload here, please. So on the loaded, a couple things we're going to need. First is I'm going to use the camera capture task. And this is a part of what's provided with the Windows Phone SDK. And this allows me to get access to the camera, the onboard camera, so that I can load it up. And I'm going to say camera capture task. Equals new camera to capture task. And then we're going to create an event for the complete. And in here, what we're going to do is basically say, if there's a photo that's coming to us, we want to do something with it. So as part of the photo result, we get access directly to the binary data, the image that's been taken on the device. And so what we want to do is take that and write it as a stream into Windows Azure Storage. And so I have a snippet here so that it's because it's a lot of code to write. And let me tell you what this snippet does. So basically, if you've used the Windows Azure SDK for .NET, you're probably familiar with the syntax already. Essentially, I'm going to create a blob client that's going to give me access to a resource that I can write up in Windows Azure, and it's going to get a container reference. So you can think of this as kind of a folder or a container where the images are going to end up going. And down here, I get a reference to the image that I'm going to upload, and I grab the stream from my photo from the camera that I've taken, and I'm going to go ahead and upload that stream into Windows Azure Blob Storage. So that's going to get us that first step where the image that we take, the picture we take from the device is going to be uploaded into Windows Azure Storage. The next thing we want to do is take the URI that's created for that blob image and write it into table storage so that we then have a reference or something we can query to show us all the images that we've written. And so here I have a table client, And it's, again, very similar. I'm going to create that table client, and then I'm going to have a table name called Pix. And if it doesn't exist, it's going to create it, and it's going to write that record up into table storage. And it's going to write the record based on a sample data, or at least it's a class that we're going to use to represent the data that we're going to write. So I'm going to go ahead and create that class. And you can see that's going to have a name and a URL that we're going to write into table storage. And sample data is, again, very similar to the .NET SDK for Windows Azure that you are probably already familiar with. And again, it's going to be a sample data of type table service entity, which allows us to define the partitioning scheme for how we write data up in Windows Azure Storage. And essentially, it gives me an opportunity to write a record up into Windows Azure Storage, define the partition key, define the row key, and then also write a name and a URI. So essentially, this will be where I will list out the records that we're writing to the device. Now, the last thing I need to do is, back in the main page, I need to create a click event for when I click the button. So, and when I click the button, I want it to camera capture task show. All right, so this should be enough to let us run, take a picture, and then upload it into Windows Azure Storage. So let's go ahead and get this right. Now, one of the things to note with Windows Azure is you have a local set of emulators that you can use for development. So there's a compute emulator, and there's also a storage emulator. And so what I'm going to start off by doing is I'm going to write to the local storage emulator and show you how all of this works locally. And then we're going to take it a few steps down where we're going to go from doing everything local to deploying this out as a service and uploading it up into storage as well. And I'm using a tool called Azure Storage Explorer. It's an open source tool that you can use. And it's going to give us a way to query and represent, take a look at the data as we're working with it. So here's my dev storage account. And what I'm going to do is go ahead and create a picture. Call it pic1.jpg. And we'll grab it from the camera capture task. So we'll take a picture, accept it. And now it's going ahead and sorry, I didn't put a breakpoint in. I should have. It's essentially going to go through the blob client code and upload the blob, and then it's going to write that record into storage. So if I come here to blobs and do a refresh, you'll see I now have a Pix container. And in Pix container, I've got pic1.jpg. And I can take a look at this, and here's the image. And the emulator doesn't give very exciting pictures, but it writes a bunch of blocks. So you can see here's our image, so we got that successfully. And if I come over here to tables, I now have a Pix table, and if I run a query against it, you'll see that I've got Pix1, and here's the URI that represents where it's stored in blob storage. So that's a way for me to get it back. So that's a good test. That's working locally. Let's do one other thing. I'm going to now create a new page where I can list out what's available in table storage. So I'm going to add another page. Let's call this list Pix. And on this page, what I want to do is have a list box, and I think I have a snippet down here. And the list box is essentially going to just do some data binding against an object that I'll define in a moment. You'll remember the name and the URL. And then if I go into the loaded event for the page, I think here what it's doing is essentially creating a data service collection of sample data. So here's our sample data type. We're going to get the context of our cloud storage and resolve the table service context. And then essentially we're just going to do some link calls that will allow us to perform and create a query that will execute against table storage service. It'll come back as the sample data, and we're going to bind the sample data list to the list Pix list box that we had entered. And the last thing I want to do is just wire up this navigation event so that when I click it, it navigates to the right spot. All right. So with that in place, let's go ahead and run our application one more time. And so that we have more than one piece of data, I will go ahead and take another picture. right, and then here we'll come over, and you'll see this, that hyperlink took us to the list pick page, and you can see here I've been able to execute a query against table storage. So that's great. Now, one of the things that you may be noting is that I'm running the local emulator, and I'm going directly to the local storage emulator. So we've skipped a whole bunch of things here. And so what we're now going to do is take it a couple of steps where I'm going to now add a web project with a web API service that's going to generate a shared access signature for us so that I can talk from the device to our proxy service to local storage. Then the next step will be to add our deployed or storage account in Windows Azure, and then we'll deploy the service up into Windows Azure so that we can go directly from the phone device to a website running in Windows Azure. So I'm going to go ahead and stop this and add a new MVC project to the application. And to work with this, I'm going to use another NuGet that's provided by Microsoft called Windows Azure.Storage.Proxy. And this proxy service is going to give us everything we need in order to create the shared access signature that we'll use on the device. So I'll do install package Windows Azure.Storage.Proxy. I'll remember to switch my target. And so this is essentially, in the default MVC project, pulling in a set of web API services that are going to essentially provide us an ability to query the service and get back the shared access signature to directly talk to the storage account. And again, this goes back to the patterns we talked about. This this gives us the ability to keep the key secure in the service and then proxy the calls through the service. So in the app start, we have an initializer. And by default, it's going to target our development storage account. What I'm going to do is go ahead and switch this to use a Windows Azure storage account. So you'll see here, this is Wade TE12. And then, of course, over here, I have my account key, which I'm going to not show the whole account key. But this is in my service. So now I have all the credentials here to generate a shared access signature to hand off to the device so that the device can talk directly to the storage service without having to have the key on it. So we'll go ahead and build this. And then since it's still going to be running locally, I need to make sure that I know what port it's running on. So 6295, grab that. And then I'm going to come over here to my phone application. And as part of the storage API, it gives you a set of resolvers. And by default, it's using the resolver for local dev storage. What I'm going to do is change the resolver so that it's pointing to my services running locally. And that's running here at these ports. So now I'm pointing the phone to our web API, and the web API is going to generate the shared access signature for us. So go ahead and, once it's done building, we'll start our web APIs. And then I will start the phone app. So now we're going to be talking to this storage account right here. So in this storage account, if I take a look, so it's got nothing in it right now. So I didn't delete the container, but there is a PIX container, but there's nothing in it right now. So let's go ahead and take another PIX. We'll call this PIX 3. And so it should be uploading it. Let's do a refresh. And you can see here's PIC 3. And again, this storage account, this is an actual Windows Azure storage account. So this is running out in Windows Azure. I took a picture from the device and was able to upload it to Windows Azure Storage using the shared access signature that our web API generated for us. And if I come over here to tables and do a query, you'll see if I query this, here's our record pointing. And one thing I want to highlight is, if you see here, the URI is no longer 127.0.0.1. It's actually wade.te12.blob.core.windows.net. So it's running up in the deployed storage service. And again, if I click the list button here, I can see that. So now we're going emulator to local service to deployed storage account. Let's do one other thing. Let's deploy this now, our service, to Windows Azure so that everything except the phone device is running up in Windows Azure. And to do that, this is just because it didn't have any local view for running in the MVC project. So I'm going to use now the new Windows Azure portal because I want to leverage something called Windows Azure Websites. And Windows Azure Websites, again, I'm not going to go too deep into it since there's a number of presentations on it here, but essentially this is a multi-tenant service that allows me to create a site instantly and then deploy my applications to it. So what I'm going to do is actually create a brand new website and do a quick create, and we'll call this Wade TE12 demo. You only have one, it's in preview, so there's only one region, and I don't think it really matters, but I'm going to go ahead and choose my other subscription. And it just takes a few moments to create, and again, think of this as now being a new website where I can deploy my application directly into it. So when I select it, what I'm going to do is take advantage of something called the Publish Profile. And the Publish Profile essentially gives me, there it is. The Publish Profile is essentially all the credentials that I need to do a web deploy, to deploy my application up into Windows Azure. So let me grab that and throw it on the desktop, get rid of my old one. And so I'm going to come over to the MVC app that we created, and I'll right-click and go Publish, and now I can import that Publish Profile that I just downloaded from Windows Azure. And this utility will parse it, and now you can see it's figured out what the URL is for me to deploy to, what the username is, the password, etc. So it handles a lot of those cumbersome tasks. I'm going to make sure that it removes any files as I publish over and over again, and click Publish. And so now I'm able to leverage Web Deploy. It's creating a Web Deploy package, and then it's going to take that package and hand it off to that Web Deploy endpoint running up in Windows Azure Websites to fairly quickly deploy my application. So while that's deploying, what I'm going to do is update my phone app and grab this URI here and come over to my phone. And now, to the storage initializer. Now, rather than addressing this at the local host, let's address the endpoint directly up in Windows Azure. Yes. And is this finished? Almost. All right, great. So it's loading. So let's do a build. And now I don't need to start the local service. I'm just going to start the phone app directly. And if all goes well, that's fine. All right, let's quickly just click our hyperlink. There we go. It was a little bit slower than I would like, but it came. So there's pick three. Let's go ahead and create a pick four. And again, now we're not addressing any service running locally on my machine. This is directly addressing and talking to a service running up in Windows Azure Websites. Let's check to see if it's there. It is pick four, and I'm sure it's there. Yep, and there's pick four there as well. So I think that's pretty cool. It's amazing if you've seen a demo like this a year ago with Windows Azure. Very different experience. We weren't able to take that last step as easily because we didn't have the ability to very quickly deploy our services out into Windows Azure Websites, since Windows Azure Websites only recently came out. So this is a great way now to securely get assets from your phone up into Windows Azure or vice versa by leveraging a shared access signature so that the phone app is addressing your proxy services running in Windows Azure and taking advantage of the storage services available as well. So that concludes demo number one. All right, so moving on. The next topic is identity. And this is a very important piece because if you consider that in the last demo, we deployed these services up into Windows Azure, but we never actually secured the endpoints for those shared access signature service. So anyone could really write to our endpoints and have a shared access signature generated. So we probably want to find a way to secure these endpoints as well. And there's a number of different ways in which people do this with mobile apps. The first and most common is a lot of people end up creating their own identity stores. So you might end up using something like the membership providers with ASP.NET and create a set of SQL tables or use Windows Azure Storage and essentially manage your users' identities for them. So the workflow may be user opens up your mobile app, you know, says log in or create a new account. They click create an account. They put a username and a password. It stores it somewhere in your tables and so forth. The nice part about this is you have full control over everything. You can manage the workflow the way you want. You have access to the you can give access to the usernames, password, etc. However, there's challenges with this as well. You have to make sure that you're securely storing these usernames and passwords. You want to make sure that they're not just hashed, and so that if they do end up getting if they do end up getting released, people can't just very easily pull up and extract the password. So there's a lot of things that you end up having to do to make sure that this is secure. And again, we probably as mobile developers also don't want to be spending our time writing workflows for password recovery and the like. So there's a drawback to it. Some people then opt to use an existing identity system. This could be using Facebook Connect, or it could be using Live ID. And so you're essentially leveraging a third-party identity provider to manage identity. And this is great. So you can have the user log into your app using Facebook, etc. One of the challenges is if you use this directly, you're now programming directly against the identity provider's protocol. And if anyone's done Facebook development over the last several years, you know that these protocols can change fairly often. And so you're constantly having to rev your application, making sure that it's working and so forth. And so even though it's nice, you're no longer responsible for managing your identities directly, you still have a little bit of inflexibility in that you're using someone else's API directly. And so that leads us to the third option. This is where you really outsource the identity management entirely. And there's a service in Windows Azure called the Access Control Service that does this. So not only do you have the ability to tap into third-party identity providers like Google, Live ID, Facebook, Yahoo, OpenID, but you can also tap into enterprise accounts as well. So you can use Active Directory through ADFS and the like. So what we're going to do is take a look at how we can start leveraging the Access Control Service, and in particular using it for OAuth and using OAuth tokens to secure our endpoints within our mobile applications. And so with that, I'm going to come to our second set of demos. And essentially what we're going to do is create a phone application that talks to a web API running up in Windows Azure securely by passing an Access Control Service OAuth token to our service, and then our service will validate that it's a valid OAuth token before actually sending the result back down to the phone. So we're going to do this in a couple of different steps. So let me start off by creating a new phone application. And the first step is we want to set it up such that we can use the phone and use the Access Control Service to log in to our application. So I've got a new phone app. So what I'm going to do is come up here to the management portal. And if you select Service Bus Access Control and caching, you'll have the ability to come here to Access Control and create your own Access Control Service namespace. Now, it takes about 2 to 3 minutes. So I could create one, but we'd have to wait a couple of minutes. So I created this one called TE12 Demo. I haven't done anything with it yet, though. It's as if I just created it. So assume that we just created this. And now we're going to go over and essentially configure it so that we can use it in our application. And so this is the Access Control Management portal. And there's a number of things that we have to do. The first is we want to specify what identity providers our users can use to log into the application. By default, Windows Live ID is selected, but I'm going to go ahead and add a couple of additional ones. I'm going to add Google. And I'm going to go ahead and add Yahoo. And so what'll happen essentially is when the user opens up the application, they're going to get what's called a Home Realm Discovery page, where they'll be able to select which identity provider they want to use in order to log into the application. And so it'll be based on these three. I need to set up a relying party. And a relying party you can think of as really just defining the application that I'm building that's going to use the Access Control Service. So we'll just call this, just phone app. And I'm going to specify a realm URI. So essentially, the realm URI is a way in which I can address this particular relying party from with my application. You can call it whatever you want. You could call it something else. I'm going to call it phone, so that I'm going to copy it because I'm going to use it later in the application. So it's URI phone. And then the other thing we want to do is the Access Control Service can support a number of different token formats. For the phone app, we want to use OAuth, so I'm going to select this simple web token. And then the last thing I need to do is generate a signing key. And the signing key is going to be the key that's used to actually sign all the relevant data as it passes the token back and forth. And so we'll leverage the signing key in a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and save this now that it's been defined. And so that defines our relying party that we're going to use for the phone app. Now I need to define some rules. And the rules are essentially how you map claims or metadata about a user, how you map it from the identity provider to your application. And so I'm going to use generate and just generate some default claim mappings from Windows Live ID, Google, and Yahoo to the access control service so that when I program against the access control service, I have a uniform way of interacting with all the metadata that's come from each of the identity providers. And so you can see here, essentially, it's defined rules like when working with Google, pass through the email address claim as email address. Same with like Yahoo and name, pass through name as name. In most cases, it's just a straight pass through. In some cases, an identity provider may call a claim something different, so you may see a transformation from one name to another name as it passes through the access control service. But the rules here give us that flexibility. So I'm going to go ahead and save that. And I've essentially now defined all the rules for my app. So at this point, I've configured everything I need to in the access control service, and it's now a matter of wiring up my app a little bit more. So let's come back here to our app, and what we're going to use is a set of, again, NuGet packages. And if you haven't used NuGet, NuGet is just it's a fabulous way to get access to some of these things quickly and right into your application. And I'm going to use a identity access control base page. And what this base page is it's not only the APIs I need in order to communicate back and forth with the access control service, but it's also a login page that will visually represent the home realm discovery page that a user can use to select the identity provider. So we'll install those pieces, and I just have to update the app in a couple of places. When the app starts, I want to make sure that it opens up this login page. So I'm going to change the default navigation page to Pages login page. And then once the user successfully authenticates, I want to have it redirect back to the main page. So I'm going to go ahead and change this so that it's pointing to the main page. And then one other spot, there it is. All right, so once the user's logged in, it will redirect back to the main page. And then the last thing I need to do is just set a couple of resource settings here. And the first is access control service namespace and then realm. So the realm, if you recall, is URI phone. And then the realm is what I created in the beginning, TEE12 demo. And so essentially, these are resources that will tell the assets we installed what service namespace to talk to when making a request to the access control service. So go ahead and build that. Now, once I log in, I want to actually also show you guys what the OAuth token looks like. So I'm going to make a couple updates here to the main page real quick. And then in the loaded event, what I want to do is extract the simple web token. So extract the token out of this resource. So it's a SWT store resource. And then we'll just, to start off with, show the simple web token in its raw form. All right, so that's all. So I'm going to go ahead and run this, and we'll take a look at this workflow. So right now, we're still not talking to any other service, but this is the first step. So this is how do we get an OAuth token from the access control service such that we can use it later on. So here I'm in the login page, and you can see these are the identity providers that were specified within the access control service. I'm going to go ahead and use Google and log in. Now, the access control service uses what's called passive federation, so it's essentially redirects between pages with tokens as part of the URI or the request header. And so you'll see here that it's actually loading up a Google browser, a Google page inside of a browser control. And one of the reasons is we want to leverage Google for logging into Google. So it actually leverages their mobily rendered web page for login, and then we'll get the token back from them. Same thing for Live ID, same thing for Yahoo. And so this is one way in which we're leveraging someone else's as an identity provider, but and we don't have to actually program against their particular protocol, the way in which they handle identity within their system. So it all gets rendered within this browser. So I'm going to go ahead and log in with a demo account that I just created. And I'm going to let it stay signed in so that I don't have to do this every single time. And so now it's contacting Google. It's logging into Google. It sends the token from Google back to me that then gets handed off to the access control service. But first, it's saying, hey, do you want to give access to that service namespace? Now, I have no idea what this says, but I've tested it, and I know this one up here says agree. And then once it's done that, it sends everything off to the access control service, and the access control service now sent me back the OAuth token. So it's here. This is all encoded and such, but you can essentially see this is the raw token that I got back from the access control service. So that's great. So that accomplished our first task, which was how do we get the token from the access control service to the device. Now what we want to do is create a web API that will call and will eventually pass that token to the web API service so that we can authenticate it. So the next step, let's add a new project. And we're going to create a web app, an MVC4. And MVC4, I don't know if you guys haven't tried it yet, these web APIs are brilliant. I love them. It's the next evolution of the WCF web API. Really nice way to create REST services up in, using .NET, and ultimately we'll deploy it to Windows Azure. Now, one of the things, if you're like me, you'll note is it adds a whole bunch of stuff we don't need. So the first thing I always do is delete a bunch of stuff. So let me delete pretty much all of that. And then what I'm going to do is create a new controller that will represent our API that we'll call. So I'm going to create a new controller. And I'm actually going to call it beer controller. And if you guys know me or saw, you may know that I'm an avid home brewer. So So I like beer quite a bit. And so what we're going to do is create a service that I can then send back a list of some of my favorite beers. So I'm just going to use the default controller with empty read-write actions. And we're going to make this very, very simple because I don't want to emphasize the web API aspect of it. I want to emphasize how we secure the web API. So essentially, I'll return some beer names here. I really like Pliny the Younger. And if you guys have any recommendations, feel free to shout them out. What else? Arrogant Bastard. Anything else? Nuno, do you have a favorite beer? Muss. All right, how about Duvel? Is it D-U-V-E-L?
Yes.
Okay. Duvel's good. I've had that while I've been here. That's been quite good. Quite strong, too. Oh, sorry, I forgot to remove something from Global ASAX. Sorry, I had deleted these, so I need to remove that. And then, so essentially we've got our controller. It's just going to return back a list of strings. I don't want to emphasize that as a point of complexity. But now I just want to register my routes. So let me get the route registration logic in here. Register routes, route table, routes. All right, so that's enough here so that when I... Let me go ahead and run this, and we'll just demonstrate that this will run and return a list of beers. What was it? API beer. All right, so you see here are the beers. Okay, so now what I want to do is, let me grab this URI here. Stop this, and we're going to go back to the phone app and make some updates here such that we can list this out in the phone app. So, in our grid, I'm going to put a list box. I'm going to call it beer list. And then instead of throwing things in the message box, what I'm going to do is, bam, look at that. Essentially, what I'm going to do is here's the API that we're calling, the API beer. We're going to create a request. Ignore this for the moment because I want to take this in a couple of different steps. But I'm going to start the request essentially and call out to that. Now, I'm also going to take the output and deserialize the JSON. And to do that, I use another NuGet package called SimpleJSON. So let me install SimpleJSON into the phone app. It's just a really, really simple parser for JSON. And then we're going to serialize that into a beers object, and we're going to bind it to the list. So that's very straightforward. Let's go ahead and just demonstrate that real quick. So we'll start this up here. And then go back to my phone app and start the phone app. And if everything is good, we'll log in. Now again, I'm not using the token yet, but I'm just calling that unsecured service. So okay, so here you can see now the service is open, anyone can hit it, and we're able to load it in the phone app. So that's kind of the first step. Okay, so now what we need to do is secure our service such that we first make sure that the token is being sent into the in with the request, and then we want to validate that it's actually a token that's been provided by the access control service. So what we're going to do is use something called a delegating handler within the web APIs, and it's not that complicated. Essentially, what it is it's a class and a handler that you can call that will inject itself as part of the process of handling and servicing the request. And what's nice about message handlers and these delegating handlers is it happens before the full context of the message is loaded into memory. So if you want to prevent something from occurring, like, you know, hey, are you authorized to do this? And if not, you know, send like a, I don't know, 404 message, 404 error or something like that. You can do it before the whole context has been loaded, so it's very efficient from a performance perspective. So we're going to essentially create this token validation handler. So let me go ahead and create this. And we want to, it's going to use, it's a delegating handler. And pretty straightforward. What we want to do is intercept the send async. So we're going to override that. And what we want to do here now is, you can see in here we get access to the request object, so we're able to take a look at some things. We want to essentially take a look and make sure that there's an authorization header as part of this. So pretty straightforward. So I'm going to check to see if the authorization exists. If it doesn't, what I'm going to do is essentially send a response back with an unauthorized error saying the authorization header was not sent. So that's the first thing. And then what we also want to do is take a look at the authorization header that was sent and make sure that it's a valid OAuth token. Now, I am not a security guy, but according to the specs, when you send and pass these tokens back and forth, the very beginning of it, you need to specify what the token format is. So the very first, in this case, the first five characters are going to be OAuth space. And so we want to make sure and do a comparison to make sure that it is an OAuth token that's being sent, and then we're going to remove that beginning, just the beginning part of it, so that we can get access just directly to the token. So those are kind of the first steps. Once that's done, we also want to then validate the token, because anyone could just pass in any kind of token into the request header, but we want to make sure that this token actually came from the access control service and was signed from the access control service. And so in order to do that, we need to have a couple of things in here. So I'm going to use this thing called a simple web token validator. Now, the simple web token validator is something that a gentleman named Matthias Walensky created, and it's, again, some code in a NuGet package. So let's go ahead and grab this. And all it does is basically parse and validate OAuth tokens, simple web tokens. So let's choose my MVC app, and then, oops, sorry. This is part of auth10.simplewebtoken. So we'll install that. And what's nice is it installs the full class. So, I mean, you can take a look and see exactly how it works. Here's all the code. You can change it if you need to. And we'll add a reference to that. And the last thing we need to do is, if you remember when we created our access control service namespace, we also had to create a signing key. We now need to grab that signing key because what we're going to do is essentially sign the token ourselves and then do a ordinal comparison of the byte arrays to make sure that they're identical. So this is a way in which we can validate that the token that was handed to us from the phone app has actually been given to us from the access control service. So we're going to grab that token and put it in here so that when we check if it's a valid token, it's going to use that to sign and then do the comparison. So let's build this and then run. Now note that I haven't updated the phone app at all. So the phone is not embedding the token, so we can check just to make sure that without the token, it's the exception is handled well. So let that start. And here, just to demonstrate, if I go to API beer, now you'll see that I get an unauthorized exception, and in the message it is, the authorization header was not sent. So that's good. And if I start the app, again, which one is 12? Once we log in, we should also get an unauthorized exception from the service. So now we're unauthorized. So now we need to actually take that token and pass it to the service. So if we come back to our page, I'm going to remove this. And you can see here what I'm doing is I'm making, you know, saying that the request accepts JSON, and then I'm adding the authorization header. Here's that OAuth signature, and then I'm basically putting the raw token in there. So let's build. Let's go ahead and start this. And I'm going to put a breakpoint in so that we can step through and you can see what's happening. And let's get it there. And let's start up our phone app. All right, so it's called in, and our message handler has now been called, and we're stepping through it. So here you can see we're first checking to see if the authorization header exists, and it does. So we would pass this first step. Here we get the auth header. We're going to do a comparison to make sure that it is, in fact, an OAuth token, and that worked. So now we're going to extract the token from there, and now we'll call our simple token validator. So if we step through the validate token method, you'll see it does a number of things. It checks to make sure that the token exists, that it's a valid simple web token. What's, I think, the most interesting is right here where it checks to see if it's HMAC valid, and this is where it does the comparison of the byte array. So you can see it comes in and creates a local version of the byte the signature using that signing token that we attach to it, and then it grabs the signed hash that was passed in as part of the raw token from the access control service, and it'll do a comparison to see if they're equal. And if they're equal, that means that they were both signed by a place that had access to the raw signing token, so we can validate that the token didn't come from the access control service. So that's just a nice, easy way to do that. You can see that it steps through appropriately, so we have a valid token. And when we return, you'll see here that it served up the data. So kind of from start to scratch, what we've seen is how to build out an app that uses the access control service to essentially get a OAuth token that represents our user, pass that to a web API, and then have the web API validate the token such that we can then send back the response to the app. So this is a great way, and actually a very lightweight way, to secure your services running up in Windows Azure, especially with phone apps. So, all right. So next we'll talk a little bit about communications. And really there's two different patterns of communications that I alluded to earlier that we see with the phone. The first is where the device initiates some sort of request. So think about your app calling out to a service and returning some data. So exactly what we saw with the last demo where we called out to the beer API and had it return back a list of beers. That is device initiated. It's calling out to a service and returning a response. You can also, though, do a cloud-initiated push to the device, and this is using a push notification service to deliver a message to the device directly. And one of the reasons this is nice is you don't have to build your app to do any sort of polling against a service. So if you want to initiate from the cloud side or from your side a message to be sent to the device, you can do it through push notifications. Now, looking at device initiated, there's this is more review than anything. There's a lot of different ways in which you can go about doing this. You have a lot of different types of patterns. You can make it HTTP-based, SOAP-based. There's a lot of different frameworks you can use and a lot of different wire formats. But I want to talk a little bit about the wire format because it's really important with mobile apps. Here you'll see on the left a representation in OData of a response that can come back from a service. Here you'll see the same data being returned back as just pure REST XML. So it's much, much smaller. It's a much smaller payload just by using a different wire format. So from going from OData to REST XML, we've been able to reduce it almost 8 times the size. The number one preference of most mobile app developers that I've met is using JSON. And here it's a very, very simple structure and way of representing the same data, but you can see here it's 639 bytes. So optimizing for limited bandwidth, because for the most part when you're building a mobile app, you're on some sort of cellular network, which may or may not have good throughput. And the smaller you can make the payload, the better. So when doing any sort of device-initiated communications, it's always a good idea to have the response back or even the request that's sent formatted with JSON. It's just a very compact way of expressing your objects. Now, from the cloud side, we talked about push notifications. And so, again, the reason push notifications even exists is we want to minimize the impact to the device and the experience on the device. So if you can think about the fact that if you wanted to be able to respond to some sort of message initiated from a cloud service, you might have to have something running on a background thread, which is consuming battery. Or you may have to write your app such that it occasionally pulls a service. And so all these things can end up either reducing battery or reducing the bandwidth available to the device and so forth. And so push notifications is a better way to go about doing it because it gives you an option to tie in directly to a capability of the platform. Now, the model with push notifications differs a little bit based on the platform. Windows Phone and the MPNS services have a way. Windows 8 has its own kind of method. But it all ties back to a very simple concept. And the first is registering the push notification channel and then storing that channel somewhere. So the pattern would look like this. Your app would call out to the platform notification service. So let's say it's a Windows Phone app calling out to the Microsoft push notification service and saying, hey, I request and I need a channel URI. And a channel URI is really just think of it as a URI that uniquely identifies the device and the application. And it's a way in which you can send a message to the notification service and have that message delivered to that device and that application. So it's just think about it as a unique ID for the device and the application. So the notification service will send that channel URI back to the device. So now the device knows, hey, anytime I want a message sent to me, it needs to be sent to this device URI. That's great, but we want to make sure that our service knows about that channel URI. So the next step of the process is to then call out to a service that we provide that then will take the channel URI and store it somewhere. So we'll store it in Windows Azure Table Storage or Windows Azure SQL Database so that later we can call and grab that channel URI and use it. So that's the first step. At this point now, for every app that's out there that's requested it, we have a channel URI that uniquely represents the app and the device. So if I want to send a message to the device, I will call into Windows Azure Table Storage, get the channel URI, and use it to call to the notification service. So MPNS, WNS, if I was sending to an iOS device, it would be the Apple Push Notification Service. And I not only do I call that notification service, but I pass to it the channel URI. That channel URI then tells the notification service how then to send the message to the device. So this is kind of the workflow that occurs. And there's a lot of different steps, but it's the most efficient way of actually sending a signal to a device to initiate something. And it could be you want to let your user know about a sale, maybe that user's following some sport event or sporting team, and this is a way to send them updates about the game or about the team without them having to open the application and look. So that's push notifications. Now, The other thing to note about push notifications is that channel URI, it usually only allows you to send a very small message down to the device. So it's not very large. I think on the Windows phone, it may be less than 1 kilobyte. So you can't necessarily send a lot of information. So one pattern people use is actually to use push notifications as a way to trigger an event within the application that then calls out to a service and gets more information. So the pattern would look like this. You take the channel URI and send a message to the notification service, and it sends a toast message, let's say, down to the device. The device then will, you know, receive that message, and then if the application is opened or the user interacts with that message, it can then call out to a web service that you have running up in Windows Azure or the cloud, and then send a message back down to the device. And now you're not constrained by the size of the message payload. You can actually now get a larger message down to the device. So this is a very common pattern to have a cloud-initiated push to the device that then calls out to a service to get some additional information. So each of the major platforms has a notification service. Windows 8 has its own notification service. Windows Phone has one. iOS has the Apple Push Notification Service. And then Android has C2DM. Now, or C2DM. I didn't follow Google I/O over the last few days. I thought I saw something somewhere about C2DM changing, or I haven't looked into it. So I this is a caveat just to say that things may have changed a little bit since I last looked, since I thought I saw some announcements around C2DM with Android devices at Google I/O. But regardless, most of the major platforms have a notification service that you can use. And so with this, I want to actually demonstrate how this would work and how we could leverage it with Windows Azure. So let's see. I'm going to go ahead and create a new phone project. And one of the first things to note is most of the marketplaces for a device, like marketplaces such as the iOS marketplace, the Windows Phone marketplace, et cetera, will not allow you to default the application behavior such that it registers for push notifications. Users have to opt into it. If you automatically create a channel URI and the user doesn't know about it, then you most likely won't be validated and your app won't be entered into the marketplace. They'll keep you out because they want to make sure that you're giving the user the option to opt into the notifications. So what we want to do is build an app that first lets a user say, yes, create a channel URI and register me for push notifications, and then basically wire up the app such that it can receive all the notifications. At the same time, we want to create a service running in Windows Azure that will accept the channel URIs from the device so that we can store them somewhere for later use. And then we also need to have a way of generating the notifications that we send down to the device. So we're going to treat this in two different parts, and we'll start with the phone app. Guess what? There's a NuGet package for all of this that we can leverage called the phone.notifications base page. And one thing actually I'll note real quick is if you take a look at some of these other ones, you'll see that there's also access control and membership. And the reason for that is I'm going to just show you a simple demonstration here where we're not securing the endpoints. But if you wanted to use the access control service to secure the endpoints for the channel registration process, you can. So that way, random people couldn't write their own app and register their application with your service. I'm going to go ahead and install this NuGet package. And this is pulling down a bunch of APIs. Again, this is provided by Microsoft. A bunch of APIs that we can use to handle all this channel registration on the device. So now that it's installed, let's go ahead and make a few changes here. So again, we want to open up the notifications page by default. Make sure I spelled that correctly. And that should be it. One thing to note in this is when this initializes, it uses this push context-based initializer that uses information here under resources to represent the channel. And you can see by default, it's going to assume that we're running the service locally. So if we wanted to point this to a different service that, let's say, is deployed up into Windows Azure, here is where you'll change the URI for the service. So that's all we're going to do on the phone device. Now what I'm going to do is go ahead and create a Windows Azure project. And the Windows Azure project is going to be where we have the services running that handle the storage of the channel URI and then allow us to generate the message that's sent to the device. So I'm going to create an MVC app. And this time I'm using a Windows Azure project, so it's going to be running in the local compute emulator. And we'll let that get going. And what I'm going to do is there's two different NuGet packages that I want to use, again, provided by Microsoft, within the Windows Azure project. The first is a NuGet package that's going to create all the web API services that we can use to store and register our channel URIs. So when the device requests a channel URI from the notification service, we then will send it to this web API service that we're hosting and store it in Windows Azure Table Storage. So the NuGet package that I want to use is called Windows Azure Notifications. And oops, that's going to fail because I didn't change my target. Try that one more time. It's one of the nice things about NuGet as well is everything's kind of wrapped up, and you can almost think of it as like a transaction. So if it fails, it rolls everything back. Also, if you later on decide you don't want to use a package, you can just use uninstall package and completely remove the NuGet package as well. So NuGet is just a great way of delivering resources and code and various things directly into your applications. In fact, at Aditi, we've taken a lot of our internal IP and created them as NuGet so that on projects we have this store and these resources that we can very easily embed into our applications. So I've got the NuGet package. Now, that, again, is just handling the service channel registration. We also want to have a way to generate the notification messages to be sent to the device. And so this isn't something you would want to use in a production application, but there is a sample management UI that you can install. Now, this is great for development purposes so that you can test and generate the notification messages and so forth. Most likely when you go to deploy this in a production system, you'd want to uninstall this NuGet package because you wouldn't want to install this as well. Most likely you would automate the notification, push notification process. But this at least gives us, from a development perspective, a nice website that we can go to generate the notifications. So basically get all that running. Or get all that installed. Then I'm going to go ahead and start our web project. So with Windows Azure, basically there's a Windows Azure project, and when you run it, it creates your CSPKG file, the representation of your cloud project, your cloud service, and locally it will generate that package and hand it off here down here to the compute emulator. And so it's going to run everything local and simulate the behavior up in Windows Azure. So we're going to run this cloud service locally, and then we're going to run the phone app to talk to our services running in the compute emulator. So we'll give it a moment to start up. Meanwhile, I'm going to go ahead and start the phone app. All right, so the phone app beat it. So let's give the service a few more seconds to run. Now, you'll note the default behavior of the phone NuGet package is to create a view model that's represented right on the notifications page that allows us to turn on push notification channels, or basically enable push notifications. So by default, again, the behavior is not enabled because, again, you won't make it past validation for any marketplaces if you automatically register a channel. And you'll see here, this is that sample UI NuGet package. Essentially, it gives us a way to represent all the registered channels. And you see there aren't any registered at the moment. So let me go ahead and register this app and this channel. And when I clicked enter, again, that was bound to a view model. And then when that state changed on enabled, it called to a method that's calling out to the Microsoft Push Notification Service and saying, please give me a channel URI. The notification service sends the channel URI to the phone app, and then the phone app passes it off to our services to store that channel information. So now when I refresh this page, you'll see that we have information stored within our service about the app. So you'll see there's no user ID information, but we have an app ID. Here's the client ID. So this uniquely identifies the app in our emulator. And then I've got some additional information about the channel. So one of the things I can do, let me pull this up here, is I can now send a notification. And there's three types within MPNS. I'm going to choose a raw and say, hello, Tech Ed Europe. And I'm going to send that. And you'll see here, right down there, that it delivered that message right into the app. So essentially, our service now was able to grab the channel URI and take the message that I had put in here and send it to MPNS. And MPNS used the channel URI in order to figure out how to send the message down to the application. And the raw message is really nice because you can just grab that raw data and update your application directly. We can also send a toast and not only a toast, but then a tile as well. So let me pin the app here, and I'll start with tile. And what we'll do is we can do a number of different things. We can say, like, new title. You can send down a count, like if you wanted to say, hey, you've got 6 messages waiting. And then we'll choose some images to send down as well, and we'll choose a back tile as well. Let's go ahead and send that. And so we've sent that to MPNS, and in a few moments we should see it update the tile here. So you can see it changed the tile, it changed the title, it added this number, and then it should flip in a moment, any second. It'll show us the back of the tile. Well, it'll do it eventually. I'm going to go ahead and also send a toast, so I can say hello and then send this down. And you'll see that here's the toast message that popped up here. I can click that and it'll open up the app. So basically, very easily, we're able to use the resources provided to create a phone application that requests the channel URI, stores it up in Windows Azure, and then we can use Windows Azure to also generate and send that notification down as well. So pretty straightforward. And that concludes demo number 3. All right, so platform services. In the last few minutes, I'll talk a little bit about some of the other services to tap into that are particularly compelling to Windows Azure and mobile developers. The access control service, I think we talked about in depth, but it's a great way to use OAuth along with existing identity providers to secure your applications. There's also a distributed cache service as well as cache roles that you can use within your cloud services. And the reason I add caching here is one of the things that helps define really good mobile applications is fast, zippy UIs. And so, like with Windows Phone, you'll note that everything is done asynchronously so that you never block the UI, et cetera. Well, this also holds true, I think, for requests of services as well. And so if every time you make a call to a service, you're having to call to SQL Azure or Windows Azure Tables and aggregate a bunch of data and do something and then send it back, that's a penalty of time that it takes to perform that work. So if there's any way that you can take that work and put it into cache, into an in-memory cache, and do so, that frees up, it makes the request faster and could potentially create a better experience for your user. So with these applications, definitely take a look at the caching service as another service within the platform to leverage. There's the content delivery network that's attached to Windows Azure Blob Storage. So essentially, all the images and all the videos that you end up generating or putting up into your storage accounts, you can also attach to the CDN. And I think there's 26 CDN. Is that right? I think it grows every few months. But there's 26 content delivery network nodes worldwide that then can cache this data so that it's closer to your users. And again, for a mobile user, whatever we can do to reduce latency and reduce the number of hops in order for them to get that data, the better. There's also a service called Traffic Manager, which provides, essentially you can think of it as load balancing across data centers. So this can give you some interesting ways directing a user to the nearest data center so that if I'm a user in Europe, rather than having it call a service in North America, I can use the traffic manager to point me to a service running in one of the European data centers. So it's an important service to take a look at. And then if you have any relational databases, you can use SQL Azure Data Sync as a way of creating the databases within each data center locally, and then using the data sync to synchronize the databases across the data centers. So you can make sure that your data stays uniform and synchronized, even though you have multiple database servers running in different data centers. So these are some great platform services for you to look into a little bit more depth. I will lastly talk about these toolkits. So if you want to get started rapidly, not only in Windows Phone, but also on iOS and Android, there are some toolkits that you should take a look at. So for Windows Phone, there's the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone. There's a Windows Azure Toolkit for iOS and for Android. And these are for native apps. So for iOS, it's Objective-C and Xcode. And for Android, it's Java, Dalvik bytecode, and Eclipse. And all of this is open sourced up on GitHub. You can get the full source and take advantage of it. So we walked through a number of different patterns. We talked about how to leverage storage securely from a mobile device. We talked about different ways to secure your services and to use OAuth tokens through the access control service. And then we looked at some different communication patterns, and in particular, push notifications and cloud-initiated communications with a mobile device. That is it. Thank you guys very much. We kind of ran out of time. I have 1 second left. But if you have any questions, feel free to stop by. I'll stick around and would be happy to talk to you. So thank you very much. Please leave some feedback. I don't know how hard it is for you guys. The system may be cumbersome, but that feedback is wonderful for us. So if if something didn't go well, if you wanted to hear something else, if you loved the talk, I would love to hear it. So please take that time. Thanks.